Since yesterday was Srila Sanatan Goswami's disappearance day, and we had some discussion on his glories, we'll continue today and tomorrow with Sanatan Shiksha, the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatan Goswami. Of course, it's a very long section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, spanning almost 5 chapters in the Madhya Leela. So it will not be possible to discuss all the 5 chapters. So I'll try to discuss at least the first chapter, or as much of it as possible. And still we'll have to go at a brisk speed. So I'll read one of the verses from the beginning of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his teachings to Sanatan Goswami. 108. Okay. Of course, you'll immediately recognize these verses, very famous verses that we're supposed to hear right in the very beginning of our Krishna consciousness. And at least the first line, I'm sure, every one of us has heard. Jivira Svarupa Hoy Krishnir Nityadas. The most fundamental thing in our teachings. Jivira Svarupa Hoy Krishnir Nityadas. Krishnir Tatastha Shakti Bheda Bheda Prakash. Suryamsha kirana jai che agni jvala chai. Svabhavika krishner tina prakara shakti hai. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. It is the living entity's constitutional position to be an eternal servant of Krishna. Because he is the marginal energy of Krishna, and a manifestation simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. Like a molecular particle of sunshine or fire, Krishna has 3 varieties of energy. Purport. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains these verses as follows. Sri Sanatan Goswami asked Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Who am I?" In answer, the Lord replied, "You are a pure living entity. You are neither the gross material body nor the subtle body composed of mind and intelligence. Actually, you are a spirit soul, eternally part and parcel of the Supreme Soul, Krishna. Therefore, you are His eternal servant. You belong to Krishna's marginal potency. There are 2 worlds, the spiritual world and the material world. And you are situated between the material and the spiritual potencies. You have a relationship with both the material and the spiritual world. Therefore, you are called the marginal potency. You are related with Krishna as one and simultaneously different. Because you are spirit soul, you are one in quality with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But because you are a very minute particle of spirit soul, you are different from the Supreme Soul. Therefore, your position is simultaneously one with and different from the Supreme Soul. The examples given are those of the sun itself and the small particles of sunshine and of a blazing fire and the small particles of fire. Another explanation of these verses can be found in Adi Leela, Chapter 2, verse 96. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Kurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadam Mahiyam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪಾದಾಂಗ್ ಸಹಗಣಲಲಿತಾ ಶ್ರೀ ವಿಶಾಖಾನ್ವಿತಾಂಶ್ಚ ನಮ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣು ಪಾದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರೇಷ್ಠಾಯ ಭೂತಲೆ ಶ್ರೀಮತೆ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನ್ ನಿತಿ ನಾಮಿನಿ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸಾರಸ್ವತೆ ದೇವೇ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಚಾರಿಣಿ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶ ತಾರಿಣಿ ವಾಂಛಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾ ಸಿಂಧುಭ್ಯ ಏವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ. ಜಯ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಜಯ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಜಯಾದ್ವೈತ ಚಂದ್ರ ಜಯ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದ. ಜಯ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಜಯ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಜಯಾದ್ವೈತ ಚಂದ್ರ ಜಯ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದ. ಜಯ ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಜಯ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಜಯಾದ್ವೈತ ಚಂದ್ರ ಜಯ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತ ವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ಐ ವಾಸ್ ರಿಫ್ಲೆಕ್ಟಿಂಗ್ ದಿಸ್ ಮಾರ್ನಿಂಗ್ ಆನ್ ವಾಟ್ ಟಾಪಿಕ್ ಟು ಸ್ಪೀಕ್ ಬಿಕಾಸ್ ಐ ಥಾಟ್ ಸನಾತನ್ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿಸ್ ಟಾಪಿಕ್ ವಾಸ್ ಓವರ್ ಯೆಸ್ಟರ್ಡೇ, ಬಟ್ ದೇ ಸೆಡ್ ನೋ, ಯು ಕ್ಯಾನ್ ಕಂಟಿನ್ಯೂ ಆನ್ ಸನಾತನ್ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ. ಸೊ ದೇರ್ ವಾಸ್ ಅ ಚಾಯ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕಸಿಂಗ್ ಸಮ್ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್ಸ್ ಆರ್ ಸಮ್ ಫಿಲಾಸಫಿ. And I chose discussing philosophy. I think we don't have enough of that. We don't have enough of the pastimes as well. But sometimes, or often actually, hearing just pure philosophy is very important. Regardless of various other, shall we say, inclinations to hear of how will it apply to my life, what practical things come out of it, etc. Practical things will automatically come out of pure philosophy. And hearing pure philosophy is the most practical thing we can do. Because you sit and hear, or we sit and read, or we sit and speak. So trying to absorb the mind in such transcendental knowledge is very important. We can reflect at this time about Rupa Goswami sitting for 10 days and hearing from Mahaprabhu. Sanatan Goswami sitting and hearing for 2 months consecutively from Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu himself sitting and hearing for 7 days from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and then speaking. So this is our process. Sit and hear. So a very sublime process. And in the process of hearing, we hear what was spoken before. And we present it as it is. That's the best thing to do, the safest process. Yesterday, briefly, in the discussion on the glories of Sanatan Goswami, we just casually or very briefly mentioned that these teachings called Sanatan Shiksha happened in Varanasi, when Sanatan Goswami managed to escape the prison in which he was placed by the Nawab Hussain Shah, and he somehow or the other, with some difficulty, managed to reach Varanasi. Mahaprabhu gave him some initial teachings. By an indication, he made him give up his very expensive, opulent-looking blanket, his quilt, and he also made him shave up. He had long hair, a long beard and everything, and he made him shave up. A good instruction for many of our devotees today who want to grow long hair, beards, etc. The Vaishnava system is to be clean-shaven. It's better. No need for mustache and beard and and various types of fashionable hair. So he made him clean shaven. And now Mahaprabhu Sanatan Goswami was ready to hear. You know, there's some preparation required for hearing. Well, hearing is nice because anyone can hear. Yes, that's true. But if you really want to get seriously into hearing, there's some preparation required. The preparation is essentially mental, but that mental also manifests in the physical platform. So we have to also come into a certain physical situation also to facilitate a hearing nicely. So, when we come to hear, what should be our attitude? That's also exhibited or demonstrated by Sanatan Goswami. When Sanatan Goswami appeared in front of Mahaprabhu, being clean-shaven, having given up that expensive blanket and donning only the Bahirvas and the Uttariya. Bahirvas is the loincloth that's worn above the kaupin, and the Uttariya is the cloth on the top. So being suitably adorned, Sanatan Goswami came there. And he took a very humble position. In the process of hearing, it is very important to take the humble position. Of course, the discussion format that is popular these days also has its utility because it enhances understanding. At the same time, the traditional process is speaking, someone speaks, someone hears. And the one who speaks will also hear at some other time when somebody else speaks and he sits and hears. But basically, speaking and hearing is the process. And one who's speaking also speaks in a mood of humility because he understands that he's representing the principle of the Guru Tattva. He's representing Vyasadeva. It was his appearance day yesterday, Guru Purnima. And the seat is called Vyas Asan, the asana, or the seat of Vyasa. So no one who sits on the seat should speak anything that is not in keeping with the teachings of the original person who was entitled to sit on the seat, Vyasadeva. So one cannot deviate from the Vedic teachings. One has to speak in accordance with that. So the speaker speaks in all humility, simply representing the teachings of the previous acharyas, representing the teachings of Krishna coming through the scriptures, and the listeners also hear in a mood of similar humility. So, being pleased with Sanatan Goswami's humility, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bestowed his causeless mercy upon him. And it is because Mahaprabhu bestowed his mercy that Sanatan Goswami got the capacity to ask the right questions and to hear those answers properly. Of course, Sanatan Goswami is an eternal associate of the Lord, but he's playing the part of a spiritual seeker, of a sadhaka, even though he's a perfected soul, and this is for our benefit. So these teachings actually span five chapters of the Madhya Leela of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, starting with chapter 20 and going through till the end of chapter 24. It took 2 months. So one can estimate that even these five chapters are not a reproduction of those teachings verbatim. Even this must be some kind of summarized presentation that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is giving. Even the 10 days of teachings to Rupa Goswami have been summarized in the 19th chapter of the Madhya Leela, just the chapter previous to this. Imagine what we can speak in 10 days. Try to make a transcript of a 1-hour lecture. It can be several pages, you know. And here we have 10 days to Rupa Goswami, so the teachings must have been quite extensive. So Kaviraj Goswami has summarized them. And similarly, 2 months of teachings, that's quite a lot of teaching. So it would appear that these teachings also have been summarized here to some degree. So we have these five chapters, and I'll just read out the titles of the chapters as given by Srila Prabhupada. The 20th chapter is called The Lord Instructs Sanatan Goswami. The 21st is called The Opulence in the Sweetness of Krishna. 22nd is The Process of Devotional Service. The 23rd is Life's Ultimate Goal, Love of Godhead. And the 24th chapter is the 61 explanations of the Atmaram verse. Actually, it is a cause of great happiness to devotees to be able to absorb their minds in these teachings. You know, just sit down. We can all sit down with these books and just keep reading. Yeah, sometimes some things we may understand, sometimes we may not understand something, but we just keep reading and we keep hearing. And it's a very relishable process. It gives a lot of happiness and also gives us some deep conviction and faith in the process. We see that many devotees, even after many years, maybe 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years even, they give up the process because they lose faith. The other day also I came across the case of one devotee who after many years gave up the process because he just lost faith. And he was asking the most fundamental questions that even a new devotee is expected to have faith in. So we may think, why do such things happen? So one reason, of course there are many reasons, but one reason is perhaps a lack of absorption in our teachings. We just have to hear and chant more of Prabhupada's books. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. And also we perhaps should reduce hearing and reading too much from other sources. So these were the five chapters. And in the 20th chapter, there are different sections. And I've just divided them into, it was a little hurried thing this morning, but I've divided them roughly into five sections. The first one is the constitutional position of the living entities. The second one is the way of devotional service that entails a description of the three divisions, Sambandha, Abhidheya, and Prayojana. The third is a description of the Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead Shri Krishna, and His various forms and the different categories into which these forms have been placed. And finally, the divisions of Krishna's ages and the pastimes connected with those. So over these 2 days, today and tomorrow, I hope that I'll be able to somewhat quickly summarize these four topics. So Sanatan Goswami approaches Mahaprabhu being empowered to ask and hear and understand these messages without having the right mood of humility and eagerness. It will not be possible for us to understand the message clearly. We will not be in the right frame of mind to assimilate what is being spoken or being what has been said in the books. And certainly we will not be in a position to ask the right kind of questions and to ask them in the right way. So Mahaprabhu, Kaviraj Goswami said, had formally asked Ramananda Rai. He became the questioner and he made Ramananda Rai the speaker. And Ramananda Rai says there that actually, my Lord, you are speaking through me. I am like a stringed instrument and you are just vibrating the string and making the instrument speak as you want it to speak. Ramananda, being an elevated soul and an associate of the Lord, understood this point very well, that actually it was Mahaprabhu who was speaking and Mahaprabhu was hearing also. And in this case, Mahaprabhu became the speaker and Sanatan Goswami became the questioner. So Kaviraj Goswami says that Mahaprabhu spoke about personally told Sanatan Goswami about Krishna's real identity, about the Lord's conjugal love, and also his personal opulence in the mellows of devotional service. Sanatan Goswami put a straw between his teeth. This is in the society of sadhus, the thing that one is supposed to do when one approaches a spiritual master. Placing a straw between the teeth, and he did it actually literally, and it also, the mood of that also has to be imbibed. One places one's straw in one's teeth and offers obeisances to indicate that one has taken a humble position. And having taken this humble position, he spoke in this way. Nicha jati nicha sanghi patita adhama ko vishaya kupe podi gunainu janama. My dear Lord, you know, I am from a low caste. He wasn't from a low caste. He was from a very aristocratic Brahmin family, even by material considerations. But out of humility, because he had associated so much with yavanas and blichas, he was earning his livelihood from them. So he took this position. Nicha sanghi. Because I'm a nicha sanghi, I'm as good as a nicha jati. Patita, adhama. I'm fallen. I'm the lowest of the low. Ku vishaya kupe podi gunainu janama. I have fallen into this well, deep dark well of sense enjoyment, and I have wasted my life in this way. Apunara hita hita kichu ina jani, gramya vyavahare pandita tai satyamani. He says, I don't know what is beneficial for me or what is not beneficial for me, but in ordinary dealings, people call me a pandit, a very learned person, and I am so foolish that I believe it. When people say that, oh, you're such a great scholar, I actually believe what they are saying. So Sanatan Goswami is teaching us how we should think. You know, somebody comes and says, Prabhu, you know, you did this so nicely, we shouldn't believe it. We may sometimes genuinely speak these words to other devotees to encourage them or to genuinely appreciate them. But when others do the same to us, we shouldn't take it too seriously. We should accept it as something that is a test for us. Do we really believe it or not? So Sanatan Goswami thinks in his humility that he doesn't have any of these qualifications, and still people call him all of these things. It's only out of your causeless mercy, O Lord, that you have delivered me from this materialistic path. Now please tell me, Kaho kartabbo amar, what is my duty? Ke ami, kene amai jara tapatraye? He asked the most basic question, Ke ami, who am I? Kene amai jara tapatraye? Why these tapatraya, these threefold miseries are afflicting me? I want to know the answer to this question. Iha nahi jani, kemono hito hoy? I don't even know this basic knowledge. How can I benefit myself in something? So, sadha sadhana tattva puchite na jani, kripa kori sava tattva kaho tuapane. I do not know what is the goal of life and what is the means by which one should obtain that goal of life. So these two words are very important for us. Sadhya, sadhana. Sadhya means the goal, and the sadhana means the process to attain that goal. So Sanatan Goswami says, I have information of neither. I don't know what is the goal of life, and I don't know the process of attaining it. Of course, if one doesn't know what the goal of life is, there's no question of knowing the process of attaining it. So please be merciful unto me and give me this information. Mahaprabhu was extremely pleased with Sanatan Goswami's mood of humility. And he said, Sanatan, the Lord has already bestowed his mercy upon you. Krishna kripa tomate purna hoy. Already Krishna has bestowed his mercy upon you. Sab tatta jano tomar nahi tapatraye. You already know these truths, and the threefold miseries cannot afflict you, and for you they do not exist. কৃষ্ণ শক্তি ধর তুমি জানো তত্ত্ব ভাব, জানি দার্ঢ্য লাগি পুছে সাধুর স্বভাব। He says, because you possess Krishna's potency, you certainly know all these things, but because you are a sadhu, and it is the nature of a sadhu to inquire, even though he knows certain things, therefore out of strictness in keeping with the nature or the duty or the code of conduct of a sadhu, you are asking me these very fundamental questions, which you already know the answers to. Those who are eager to awaken their spiritual consciousness and who have thus unflinching, undeviated intelligence certainly attain the desired goal very soon. My dear Sanatan, you are perfectly fit to propagate the cult of devotional service. Therefore, gradually hear all the truths about it from me. I shall tell you about them. Then Mahaprabhu speaks these opening lines of the teachings. So Mahaprabhu's teachings actually begin here. What is our identity? Nowadays when we are speaking to people, especially in the West, you know, the word spirituality is very common. We refer to it as Krishna consciousness and devotional service, bhakti yoga, etc. But a commonly word, a used word is spirituality. And just the other day, I was at a program and I was asked the question, what is spirituality? So it's a very basic question. And we don't find a direct answer exactly to this, but we find it in so many different ways. And I define spirituality as the process of reviving our original nature, which is beyond this material body. Spirituality essentially deals with the answers to three questions. What is our true identity? What does it mean to be situated in one's true identity? And number three, how does one get there? That's all. Spirituality is a subject that deals with these three questions. I'll repeat them. What is our true identity? What does it mean to be situated in one's true identity? And how does one get there? So spirituality gives us these answers. And when we go deeper, we understand the process of spirituality to be non-different from Krishna consciousness. So Mahaprabhu is going to speak about these topics, but he starts with the fundamental question of one's true identity. And so he says that yes, Jivera Swarupa Hoy Krishner Nitya Das, that the living entity is an eternal servant of Krishna. Krishner Tatastha Shakti Bheda Bheda Prakash. So we are the marginal energy of Krishna. And we are his marginal potency, and we are eternally his part and parcel. Suryansha. Kirana jayche agni jwala chaye. Just like there is a molecule, a particle of the sunshine, or a spark of the fire. Similarly, we are a particle of Krishna's spiritual energy. We are a spark of the flame that is Krishna, or Krishna's spiritual energy. So he makes clear the identity of the spirit soul. Just as the illumination of a fire which is situated in one place is spread all over, the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parabrahma, are spread all over the universe. And he explains that Krishna has three divisions of his energies. There is the spiritual energy, the material energy, and the marginal potency, which is Krishna, which is the spirit soul, I beg your pardon. So originally Krishna's energy is spiritual, and the energy known as the living entity is also spiritual. However, the living entity comes under the control of the illusory energy and forgets his nature. And because the living entity in the material world is covered over by the material energy to different degrees, So therefore, we see the different forms of life who exhibit their consciousness to varying degrees. So in some living entities, and even within the same species in different living entities, we see different degrees to which one is freed from the influence of this covering. And he goes on then to speak about how the living entity goes through different situations in this material world. Sometimes in the higher planets, sometimes in the lower planets, sometimes in one type of species, sometimes in another type of species, etc. And he gives the example, Danda jane raja jano nodite chubai. He says, the state of a living entity who is sometimes raised to the higher planetary systems or to a state of material prosperity and sometimes drowned in a hellish condition is exactly like that of a criminal whom a king punishes by submerging him in water and then raising him again from the water. There were many creative types of punishments that kings used to give in the olden days. And one of the types of punishments is mentioned here. Rather grotesque and cruel, but what to do? In the old days, that's the kind of punishment that used to be there. So the soldiers of the king would catch hold of the criminal, take him to a body of water, make him stand there in the water, and then they would forcefully dunk him in the water till the very last moment that he would be able to survive there. Till as long as the person could possibly hold his breath. And then when they knew that this was the last moment, then they would lift him up. And as he would be brought out of the water, then naturally he experienced tremendous relief. That relief he experienced as happiness, as bliss. Being able to breathe again is not an ordinary thing. You know, we take the process of breathing very casually, but one who has asthma understands how important breathing is and how difficult it can be when there are impediments. So for a person who is an asthmatic or who is going through an attack of asthma, the time when he can actually breathe normally is like ecstasy. It's like bliss. But actually it isn't bliss. It's just the normal condition of his body. But because he has been in an abnormal condition of extreme suffering, so even the normal condition appears like some kind of ecstasy or bliss. Similarly with the person, the criminal who is being dunked in the water, breathing is actually his normal condition. But now when he's placed under the water, you know, there is enormous pain. And when he's brought out again, that normal condition seems like bliss to him. So similarly, in this material world, we may experience heavenly delights by going to Swargaloka, being with the Apsaras, and drinking Somaras, and all of that. And that may seem to be bliss. Or even on the earth planet, we may enjoy various types of pleasures and may think, this is it, this is happiness. But actually, this is not happiness. This is just a reflection of the happiness. And when we are in extreme suffering, then we relate the so-called pleasures of this world to happiness. So this is an interesting analogy that we might like to remember. Very useful, even for preaching. So next time we are out distributing books and someone asks some questions, this is an interesting analogy to give, which is given by Mahaprabhu. And then Mahaprabhu speaks, citing some verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam about how the living entity is placed into fear and anxiety because of turning his back to Krishna, so to speak. Because of being absorbed in something other than Krishna, which is Maya, the jiva becomes engrossed in fear and anxiety. But there is a way out. And the living entity cannot do it on its own. So the jiva has to look for a means of deliverance. The jiva is incapable of delivering himself. Maya mugdha jivar nahi swatah krishna gyan, jivara kripaya koilo krishna veda puran. Another important verse. Maya mugdha jiva, the jiva who is under the strong influence of maya, nahi swatah krishna gyan, does not have the capacity to understand Krishna's knowledge on his own. Therefore, jivara kripaya, being merciful to the jivas, Krishna has given us the Vedas and the Puranas, these different scriptures. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada gives some very interesting analogies of how we need three things for deliverance. One, we need Guru. The second, we need Shastra, the scripture. And the third, we need the super soul in the heart. So there are three things that will help us to get delivered from this ocean of nescience or maya. In this way, one can acquire knowledge of conditioned life and come to understand how to attain liberation. Without these three, it is not possible. So the three once again are Guru, Shastra, and the Super Soul in the heart. The Super Soul is a plenary expansion of Krishna. From within, the Super Soul gives us some guidance about how we should go forward, but we tend to ignore his guidance. Then, very kindly, he appears in the form of the Shaktyavesh avatar, Vedavyas, who has compiled the Vedas and the Puranas, etc., which give us guidance. And because we cannot understand the scriptures on their own, so we need another external manifestation of Krishna, who is a spiritual master, who can then explain these scriptures to us. So by a cooperative endeavor of these three forms of Krishna, that is the spiritual master, the scriptures, and the super soul in the heart, the living entity can attain deliverance. Then Mahaprabhu speaks about the three categories of deliverance, or three categories of knowledge, I beg your pardon. And he says that abhidheya nama bhakti prema prayojana purushartha shiromani prema mahadhana. Veda Shastra kahe sambandha abhidheya prayojana krishna prapya sambandha bhakti prapti rasadhana. There are three steps that are very important to understand. All transcendental knowledge, all the Vedas, devotional service, everything can be classified into three steps. Sambandha means to understand who we are and what our relationship with Krishna is. Abhidheya means to act according to that relationship, and Prayojana means the ultimate fruit of having acted in accordance with that sambandha, which is love of Godhead. And then, in order to explain this, he cites a parable, a story. One time there was an astrologer. The astrologer came to the house of someone he knew. And he saw that that man was very distressed. So the astrologer asked him, "Why are you unhappy? Your father was very wealthy, but he did not disclose his wealth to you because he died elsewhere. So don't be happy. You actually are not so poor. There is a treasure which you have inherited. It's just that you don't know that you have this treasure, and you don't know where to find it." So the analogy is that we are here in the material world suffering the pangs of birth, death, old age and disease, but we are not meant to be here. We are actually very wealthy. We are actually very happy. Our father is Krishna. We are the children of a very wealthy father. So we don't need to worry. someone who is poor has somehow got distanced from a very rich father, has only to be reminded, look, your father is very rich. You have a rich father. You have no business being here sitting on a street homeless and begging for money. You actually have a wealthy father, so your problem is solved. It's the beginning of the solution, actually. So similarly, we as living entities need to be informed. Look, you're a part and parcel of Krishna. And Krishna is all bliss, and you are also all bliss. So therefore, this is the first step. But it's not enough. It's not enough to be told that your father is very rich and he's left you a great amount of wealth. The next logical question is, where can I find that wealth? What good does it do to me to just be told you have wealth but not to tell me where the wealth is? So that's the next question. So when the poor man is informed that you have a wealthy father, that's Sambandha Gyan. The living entity is informed of his true identity, his true position. And then, what do I do? Where do I find that treasure? And what do I do to excavate that treasure from wherever it has been buried? That is abhidheya. That is the process of devotional service. And then finally, what happens when the poor man finds that wealth? When he's directed to the right place where his father has dug that wealth, and he gets hold of that wealth, now he enjoys life and experiences all sorts of material pleasures and happiness. So similarly, when we find the treasure of Krishna, what is the fruit of that ultimately? Just like that poor man experiences the happiness of wealth, material happiness, similarly, the aspiring devotee, having found Krishna, experiences the joy of Krishna prema, pure love of Godhead. So in this connection, he tells the parable. He says that, remember, I'll read that section, so it's interesting. Why are you unhappy? Your father was very wealthy, but he did not disclose his wealth to you because he died elsewhere. Just as the words of the astrologer Sarvagya gave news of the poor man's treasure, the Vedic literatures advise one about Krishna consciousness when one is inquisitive to know why he is in a distressed material condition. The treasure is in this place, but if you dig towards the southern side, the wasps and drones will arise and you will not get your treasure. So Sarvagya informs the poor man that there is treasure that is there in the vicinity of the house in which he is living. Now there are four directions, east, west, south and north. So in which direction has the treasure been buried? So Sarvagya tells the poor man, he said, look, don't go to the south. Because if you go to the south and dig, there are wasps and drones over there, and they will simply bite you. So the wasps and drones on the southern side of the house represent the process of karmakanda, the path of fruitive activity, the path of trying to fulfill one's material desires through the Vedic literatures and try to get material enjoyment. Because the attempts for material enjoyment will lead to pain and suffering eventually, which resemble the bites of the wasps and the drones. So my dear friend, Sarvagya told that poor man, don't dig for that treasure in the southern side, because you'll only get bitten. And it's quite bitter, the whole experience. So don't go there. Don't also go to the western side and try to dig, because there are ghostly beings there. And the ghostly beings, they represent Jnanakanda, the process of mental speculation. Interestingly, just to take this analogy further, by the process of Jnana Yoga, one is supposed to merge into the impersonal Brahman. And Srila Prabhupada explains elsewhere that even the demons, they also go there. So therefore, it is like committing spiritual suicide. When you commit suicide for this body, then you become a ghost. When you commit spiritual suicide, that's also like a ghostly existence. So the analogy is quite appropriate here. So when you dig in the western side of the house, my dear poor man, you will find ghosts who will come and haunt you and create enormous anxieties for you in your mind. So don't dig in the western side. Don't even go and dig in the northern side, because in the northern side, you will find a big black snake that is waiting to devour you. That is Kaivalya, the process of mystic yoga. When you follow the process of mystic yoga, you also want to merge into that impersonal. You want to become the Lord. So that also is a very destructive process. So don't go there. That is a process of Ashtanga Yoga, the mystic yoga process. But if you dig on the eastern side, you will find the treasure. And that treasure is called Bhakti Yoga. You will be able to attain that treasure. So the process, this represents the process of Abhidheya. So Abhidheya means to dig in the right place. To understand that Bhakti Yoga is the real process. And you start executing. You start digging and then you get that treasure. And finally, once you get that treasure, then you enjoy it. That is Prayojana, which means you enjoy the transcendental bliss of Krishna consciousness. You get Krishna Prema. So in this way, the parable of Sarvagya is very instructive. So digging in the eastern direction means that we can get Krishna consciousness and ultimate love of Godhead. So the three steps, Sambandha, Abhidheya and Prayojan, have been summarized in this little parable. So what I'll do is I'll ask a volunteer from amongst you to explain the parable and to describe how it explains Sambandha, Abhidheya and Prayojana. Any volunteers? Through this simple analogy and the parable. Want to try? Yes, Pancharatna Prabhu.
It begins by describing the situation of the jiva that is unaware of his actual position.
Yes.
Because he's thinking he's poor, he's without anything, but he actually has a great treasure.
Yes.
Because his father is actually very wealthy.
Yes.
But he doesn't know where that treasure is. So the first part is the sambandha of understanding who I am. I am actually the son of a great wealthy man.
Yes.
And I actually have all this riches that is stored somewhere, but where is it? That's the next.
Yes.
Where is it? So that comes then to the Abhidheya. Well, how do I find this treasure? So then there are four
directions
to go. And in those four directions which are described, one direction is going to actually give so much disturbance. You will not find the treasure and you will actually be you'll find even more suffering. Yes. Because you'll be bitten and stung by the wasps and the drones. So don't go in that direction, which is the southern, I think.
Yes.
Southern direction.
Yes, Karmakanda.
Karmakanda. So then the other direction, if you go in the western direction, then you will also have you'll meet with ghosts, and the ghost analogy is the Gyanakanda path, because you actually become even more bewildered. You'll lose sight. You'll lose yourself. You'll lose your identity. Your awareness of yourself, lost in the maze of speculation.
Yes.
And then, so don't go in the west, and then don't also go in the north, because there the path of austerity and tapasya and renunciation and great effort to acquire yogic power, or the yogic city power, because that will also you'll end up frustrated. So there's only one way to go.
And what's there?
And what is there when you go in the eastern path, where you surrender to I didn't quite catch the description of that path, but where you're actually opening yourself to the revelation of that treasure, where it is, not thinking you're going to get it on your own, but that it has to be revealed to you. Then you will find it, because the treasure will be revealed, and then you can obtain it, and then you can enjoy it by practicing the.
Thank you, Pancharatna Prabhu. Right. I think you deserve the Mahaprasadam plate that will come shortly. That was put very eloquently summarized. In the eastern side, we have the treasure. So the process of abhidheya is like the process of digging for that treasure, because at least you're going in the right direction. You're not going to Gyanakanda and the other khandas. You're digging, you're in the right direction, you're moving, and the treasure is there, you know it. And then you're still digging and you can see it, and then when you actually obtain that treasure and then you spend it and enjoy it, that's like Krishna Prema. And the process of trying to acquire it is abhidheya. Excellent. Thank you very much, Pancharatna Prabhu. So that's the whole parable summarized. So the whole summary of Sambandha, Abhidheya and Prayojana, our identity and our ultimate goal of life, is all in this very simple parable. So I'd suggest we all try to remember this little story, very easy to remember, and we'll know about the goal of life. Is there any other comment or question? Yes.
I had a question, because it's interesting that Mahaprabhu begins here, and whereas Sri Krishna in the Gita begins a little step earlier, because he's explaining to Arjuna that you are Jiva. Here it seems that Mahaprabhu has skipped ahead and said, to assuming, or you could say that, well, Sanatan understands that he's not his material body. Whereas Krishna begins explaining to Arjuna that you're not the body. So is this, how is that playing in here?
No, actually, he begins by speaking about, you know, Krishna tatastha shakti bheda bheda prakash. Also, Krishna, he talks about the soul, right? Suryansha kirana jaiche agni jvala chai, etc. He speaks about the living entity as a spirit soul, as a marginal energy of Krishna. He introduces Krishna right in the beginning. That's there. But the soul in relation to Krishna. And also, previous to this, in his teachings to Rupa Goswami, he does talk about the individual spirit soul at some length. That's the fundamental thing to Rupa Goswami. And that happened before in Prayag. And following that, in these teachings, he also starts from the very basics. And then he's going to take it up to stratospheric levels as we go on and reach the final chapters. It's way, way, way up there. Yes, Sutta Prabhupada. Mic, please. So tomorrow we'll talk about the description of the absolute truth and its various forms, and we'll see how far we get tomorrow.
Hare Krishna. Yes. Just with regards to philosophy, Srila Prabhupada often talks about Guru Sadhu Shastra as a check and balance to make sure everything is in line. At the same time, we understand that access to any of these needs to go through the other. Like, for example, Mahabharata says, Tarko Pratishtha Shruta Yovibhinna. You can't understand Shastra. It's in the heart of a devotee. The Dharma is hidden within the heart. So you have to go through a Vaishnava to understand Shastra. So how do we reconcile these two things, that Guru Sadhu Shastra are on one hand a check and balance, but on the other hand, access to any of one of them is required through the other, so they're all interdependent as well.
Yes, certainly. They are interdependent. Interrelated, rather. They are interrelated. Because after all, whatever the guru speaks has to be according to sadhu and shastra. Whatever the sadhu says will also be according to shastra and according to his guru. And whatever the shastra says will be repeated by the guru and the sadhus. So it's three tripods, so to speak, on which the process of Vedic understanding rests. Vedic realization depends on these three. For our navigational purposes, we need this. We have the GPS for navigating around London, but for navigating to the spiritual world, we have the GSS, the Guru Sadhu Shastra. Yes. Yes, so we need all three together. Otherwise we won't know which is which. Which is the correct shastra? Someone comes and says, this is the correct shastra. Or there are many types of shastras. Someone may say, well, this Karmakanda shastra is one, is the goal of life. You must follow that. Right? So which shastra to follow? So it's dependent.
So we must begin with Guru, is that the way? Because otherwise, how do you have independent access to Shastra if you don't begin with Guru?
But even to understand Guru, you need a bit of Shastra. You need to know a little. As Prabhupada says, if you want to buy gold in the marketplace, you must have some understanding of what gold is. You may not be expert like a jeweler, but you should have some understanding. Similarly, even in trying to find a guru, one should have some understanding of what a guru is supposed to be. So a little amount of understanding of all these is essential. So it has to be an informed thing. We have to go with our eyes open. It may be that somebody is fortunate without this understanding to just go and find the right person, but he's lucky. But it can't be the general rule, because if one does it on a sentimental basis, there is every likelihood one may take a wrong decision. One may go for charisma, one may go for something else, right? So in other words, the responsibility rests with the seeker, with the aspirant. The aspirant has to get a little well-informed, even to identify who should be the guru. And there are so many types of gurus speaking different kinds of philosophies. It's mind-boggling. So which guru should you approach? And ultimately, all of these will depend on one's sanskars from previous lives. You know, there is our inclination. We all have a certain disposition towards a certain type of realization. and we'll be drawn towards that type of a guru or that type of a philosophy or a path. So it's also connected to our past. So therefore somebody, is immediately, he fancies the one type of person, this is my guru, And someone else, something else clicks for someone. Even with basic philosophical understanding, something clicks for someone, it doesn't click for somebody else because of the sanskars. Someone has jnana bija, someone has yoga bija, someone has karma bija, someone has bhakti bija. So one in whose sanskaras, the bhakti bija, is more prominent, that fortunate person will be attracted to the devotional service path. Right? Yes, Govinda.
Thank you. Did a question regarding the Goswamis. There's this letter, Prabhupada wrote a letter where he said, Rupa and Raghunath Goswamis are Nitya Siddhas and the other ones are Sadhana Siddhas. But it seems to be like some people just look at this and they can't really think what to make of it. And some other Gaudi Vaishnavas say they're all Nitya Siddhas. Just wondered how to see it.
It's a technical difference. Yeah, this is a bit of a point of discussion among some. Are Rupa and Raghunath the only two eternal associates? Rupa Raghunatha Pode Hoybe Akuti, yes. Or are the others also? Well, does it really make a difference so much for us? I mean, they are associates of Mahaprabhu. Very, very intimate associates. So it's just a technical point, really, and it doesn't really matter. They are associates. Their identities in Goloka Vrindavan are known to us. They are our acharyas. That's enough, I think. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande.